going. I told you tonight it was going to be a rocket ship and then some. It is just an amazing world, and the more we look and the more brilliant people like Catherine Austin Fitts help, we get a chance to see things that otherwise we would never even hallucinate about. And you got a real good glimpse of it in the first hour. When she mentioned Norman Berggren and the rings of Saturn, that just brought it all home. Deep space program, E.T., don't laugh. And look up Henry Kissinger's quote, almost 50 years ago now, how mankind would come together, give up all their rights and freedoms and liberties if they would be protected from a perceived off-planet invasion and threat. Real simple. Okay? But this is a big story. And when it was seen in Norman Berggren's photographs that the rings of Saturn in one particular place were being mined, in other words, the ring was being mined and the debris, the whatever it is, the rock, whatever elements were in there, whatever minerals were being taken away by these big ships, which were quite visible. And I had that story, it must be 20 years ago here. It all makes sense. And think about William Tompkins and what Bill shared with us, and there's more there too. He has several books worth of information together, and Dr. Bob Wood is working on those. They're going to be coming out soon. Now, that brings me to the bottom story of the three picture stories I have at the top of the homepage. And if you look at the image in the F-18 Super Hornet, allegedly, of a perfect, stable, unidentified flying object. Look, the government has had enough footage in a linear sense, film, videotape, to go to the moon back and forth several times. They know all about this stuff. This business of Harry Reid and Robert Bigelow and the Pentagon running a secret $22 million UFO research project is crap. It's insulting. It's total crap. They know everything. We have downed spacecraft. We have recovered disks. We've got alien bodies. Look, Richard Nixon took Jackie Gleason, his very good friend, to an Air Force base in Florida and showed him some of the corpses. And that's a fact. So what we have here is an issue that this is misdirection. It's being intentionally put out there to cause people to look in another oblique angle that they shouldn't be looking at, to get them focused on something small when they should be pulling back and looking at the biggest picture possible. All right. This hour, Gary Holland is back tonight. He's got some stories about what happened to friends of his and perhaps himself, I'm not sure, in the Navy in terms of visitors from allegedly outer space. We don't know where they come from, but they're here. And this is going to be an interesting story as well. But Gary, you've been on this for a long, long time. You understand about unidentified flying objects. You understand about ET. You've been a student of that probably for decades. This story about the Pentagon came across my desk as one whopping insult. How dumb do they think we are? I guess in terms of the sheep and the majority, they can get away with that because the sheep will say, wow, $22 million, a hidden UFO research program in the Pentagon. Oh, my. No, 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 no. No, no, no. It's silly. Welcome back, Gary.
Hey, good evening, Jeff. How's it going?
It's all right, thanks. It's crazy. Crazy.
Yeah, very crazy. You know, one of the biggest red flags, that the first thing I noticed in that story is it said $22 million. When was the last time you knew the Pentagon do anything for that low for just $22 million?
Oh, they can't even buy a hammer for $22 million,
no,
so it's a
absolutely
joke.
Absolutely not. $22 million for a secret program, and
yeah.
$22 million would get you maybe the hangar door open to a secret program.
Maybe.
And so, first of all, that's just an insult to everyone's intelligence, saying it was just $22 million secret program.
Right.
When it was kept secret for decades. It's absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, I'm not going to say I'm an expert. You know, there's a lot of experts you've had on. You're an expert yourself. amateur wise, I've been looking into this, well, since I was a kid. The first time I get interested in UFOs was in 1976, at the ripe age of just barely turning, you know, a little bit after when I was 3 years old. I can still kind of remember these shows, but in reruns of In Search Of.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Oh, sure.
It was one of the greatest for the 1970s. You got to understand, and in the early 80s. In Search Of was actually a cutting-edge program.
People
didn't talk about stuff like that.
Yes, it was.
They did. It was late night. It was once in a million you get like a local late night radio guy that was, you know, once in a million talk about it. But it, for a TV show to be prominently displayed on, and it was on Sunday nights, and I remember that show clear as day, and I got interested in it, and won I just recently looked at this again on YouTube, the same In Search Of program that caught my attention. A little town called Mellon, Wisconsin, they had a family called the Baker family there. The whole family seen a UFO. They were freaked out about it. The whole family seen it. Then what happened to the sheriff department came out, and that same night, the sheriff's department in that area had chased lights that were going all over the sky. And these people, you know, obviously the people in town were, you know, laughing about it and making fun of them about it. But a family wouldn't make up a story like that. And by the way, the police wouldn't make reports about chasing lights all over that area that same night as one big running joke. And so that's what caught my interest. And, you know, when people and government go out of way to attack somebody, you always have to be suspicious because, if they're crazy like you're saying, why would you take all the effort, all the propaganda, and it ain't free, none of this stuff, by the way, when a government does it. So they're spending man hours and money and time for disinfo and propaganda against people who have been in the UFO research community for years. Why would they take the effort to do that? If people are just, well, they're just crazy conspiracy theorists, we'll just leave it alone, ignore them, and then move out. But you set up a whole disinformation office in the Pentagon for years. They've had this, and you know that yourself.
Yeah.
And they have to budget money for it and all this. So for them to all of a sudden show their whole hand and lower their poker face to say, well, we've been doing, there's a secret study. And, you know, we did a secret program, and there was a, you know, and they released that F-18 footage of the pilots saying there's more than one of them, and it, you know, it's a fleet of them, and they show this UFO doing all this crazy stuff on the F-18, you know, the pod cameras. And the DOD is the one who released it. It wasn't like it was just snuck out of, you know, in the middle of the night, and it was like a, you know, between a reporter and, you know, this was leaked information. This is an official release from the Department of Defense. So what they've been saying over the years then is, you got to understand what they've came out and admitted. I mean, and then maybe they probably don't even realize it. What they've admitted over the past 50 years, what they've called everyone crazy and that they're lies and blah, 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 is now they're the ones saying, well, we've been tricking people all along.
That's right.
I mean, that's really coming out to do that. You have admitted it.
Did you hear Catherine last hour?
Bits and pieces.
$21 trillion just from DOD and HUD. That's just from those two.
Yep.
They have us, and
you know,
as I said,
$21 trillion, you could probably put that to the power of 10.
That's right.
Really what's missing.
That's exactly right. I kept saying that's not the cap, and she said, yes, it's not the cap. Look, here's the deal. When people talk about a $22 million pissant program in the Pentagon, no one seems to be able to mention Area 51, S4, Roswell, any of these other things that go back forever and ever. And it's just, I guess in a way,
the
you got it.
Don't forget, Jeff, too, the secretive, not too much of a secret, because, I mean, I've known about it. The Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, where they were reverse engineering this technology.
That's exactly right.
The secretive hangars at Wright-Patterson. And by the way,
it's all underground.
think about this. We know about Area 51. We know about Wright-Patterson. And there's other, you know, Roswell and, you know, and White Sands and all the different areas that we've known about. Now, that's what they want you to know, because believe me, if they didn't want you to know, you wouldn't have known it.
Right.
So that's somebody in the government who had let you know this is what we're doing. This is like a slow rollout, you know, like a slow rollout.
It seems to be an incremental disclosure effort, another small step, and they're slowly bringing it along. I agree. I don't know if any of you remember going back. This goes back quite a long time ago. There was a researcher, wonderful guy. I had him on in the mid to late 90s. Name is Kenny Young from Ohio. And he got through, I don't know how he did it, but he got a copy of the 9/11 dispatch tapes in Ohio when officers were called and they were chasing a huge craft. And those tapes are so fascinating, and this is the real deal. They wouldn't let anybody have to. Kenny got the tapes. We used to play them on the program, and he would talk about them. Just astonishing. 9/11 dispatch tapes. These cops are chasing these things, and the one guy at one point, he says, I'm going to stop my car. I'll be out of my car. I'm out of service. He was so overwhelmed with this thing that was just above his cop car, he had to stop. Look, $22 million is an insult to anyone who seriously studies the phenomenon, okay? So don't do anything more than that story lets you do, which is to tell you it's another incremental step in disclosure. That's all it is. It's just a little nudge to get some ink, to move some news off the headlines, and to let you know that, yeah, there's something else going. But my God, Gary, they've been conditioning people since the 1950s. How much more do they have to do? I think most people would kind of yawn if they were told tomorrow that, yeah, there are other intelligent life forms out there and they're visiting here. I don't think people would get shook at all.
I don't think they would, but what they would be shook about is how long we've known.
Oh, the lies. Oh, the lie, of course.
And had relations with these off-planet
entities. Well, Eisenhower met with them in 1954. He actually had a meeting with them. Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Again, what we've known of. See, again,
that's right.
Said, that's what you know of. What we don't know of is what's been going on for all these years. You know, like, I think it was Preston James was on your show not too long ago claiming, you know, saying, which I agree with him, is that what you've seen on the X-Files is pretty close to reality.
Right.
It really, truly is. I mean, some of the things that
That's the A-plot, the mythology plot, the UFO plot, not the throwaway standalone episodes about Monster of the Week. The main storyline. There was so much truth in there. When I watched it, I recognized it as being probably quite true. And you're right. Good point. X-Files.
Also, it's not, yeah, exactly. And it's more about the behind, not just about the spacecraft and, you know, motor getting sucked out and, you know, into this, you know, different things. But the main thing, too, is I think Mulder represents us being in the general public and researchers. The people behind, what the main thing about, if you notice about that show, too, it's about the cover-up. It's not just about the cover-up, what kind of cover-up. It's not that they're covering up the UFO, per se. They're covering up that the secret elite, which would be the globalists, Zionists, whatever you want to call them,
right,
are in communique with these beings.
Working with them.
Actually kind of like working with them, more than likely being their, it'd be like the version of an Uncle Tom.
Well, they'd be their gophers,
they'd be
basically.
Subservient, exactly. Yeah. They're gophers. They're subservient to them. And they're doing their bidding for them on this planet. And more than likely for, maybe from just as simple as mining reasons, we don't know. There's certain elements on this planet they might need, and you know it might be just.
Were they getting helium-3? They're getting helium-3 off the moon, and God knows what they were getting out of the rings of Saturn, and certainly they're mining here as well. Sure.
Yeah, and believe me, and if we have, which we do, have a secret space program, and we know we do. I mean, look, that's the worst kept secret itself, is that you know for sure there's a secret space program. And yes, probably some of that, you know, undocumentable adjustments has been going to that secret space program.
Right.
Now the question is it for the betterment of humanity? Probably not. It's probably for the betterment of these off
Oh, it's not
entities,
of course,
who are working with the elite, who are using planet as maybe as a base station. Who knows why they like this planet particularly? It's not just because it's a habitable planet. Because for them, they might have technology where it doesn't matter what planet they're on.
Saddest bottom line of all. We needed the big takeaway from what Gary's saying and what we've talked about over the years. Human life means nothing to these people. You got to keep that in mind. Go ahead.
Absolutely nothing. Think of the entities. Probably they're not humanoid, or if they are, they're a shell of a human, which is they don't have emotion, they don't have empathy, they don't have sympathy. And that's why, if you've noticed, the elite of this world act the same exact way. No empathy, no sympathy.
They're sociopaths, psychopaths, absolutely devoid of any morality, no boundaries, no care. Remember what they do at the Bohemian Grove? They burn care every year. Yeah. They sacrifice care. The cremation of care.
They're using a mock child in that Bohemian Grove. They're using a fake doll-looking child. You're insane.
You're wrong. No.
So to think that they're kidnapped children. They're using on there. Then you'll never know the difference. You'll never know. I mean, yeah, they let Jones in there that one time.
Absolutely a contrived event. You bet.
Exactly. Let him in. He didn't sneak in. You don't get by stuff like that. You never do. And if
that's called establishing somebody in the media and the alt media right away. That's what they did. They gave him carte blanche credentials, and he was a star right away. Bang. He got in the grove.
Built his street cred, built the street cred, and then built his way up to street cred. Now it's just obviously we already know he's obviously bald face, showed in your, right in your face what he is now. But before, I mean, he gave the impression that he was, the outside guy and, did the whole thing. And it's what we call in wrestling, they call that work. Okay. Now, if he was real, they would call that a shoot in wrestling. But I know there's got someone in your audience that know about wrestling. It's a work, meaning that it looks like a real story, but it's actually a scripted story. So it's called a work, and he did his work, and he did his thing for the years, and now he's, where he's at, making plenty of money with a lot of Jewish interest supporting him.
Right.
I mean, this already.
You got it. Okay. Now, the most important thing about all this is, for a lot of you out there who this doesn't work, that's fine. Just all I ask you to do is to put it on the table and leave it sit there. You don't have to make a decision about it. Just consider it as a potential possibility. All right, that's all we want you to do. And for those of you who have been on board for a long time, this is nothing new to you. No surprise. None of it. Okay, now, just for fun, Gary was in the military. He served two tours, one in Africa, one in the Middle East. As a U.S. Marine, he's an American patriot. He's paid the price, as many have. But you did have some knowledge about something you told me about, and I'd like to hear more detail about it, having to do with Navy ships and things. So what's the story?
Well, this was in the early 90s. It was after Desert Storm. I'm not going to name specifics, and the reason why I won't do that is because I don't want something twisted later on down the road to say, well, he gave out secret information, blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to use generalistics. We were traveling across the Indian Ocean, okay, and this was in a whole group of ships.
Like a task force of ships?
Yes, a group. Yeah, it would be a group.
Okay, a group of ships.
Of battleships, right. Carriers, helicopter carriers, this type of thing.
Got it.
And so we're going across. This is when you're heading, towards the Middle East and that in the Africa area. So you're heading across. You get into the Straits of Gibraltar, which is near Malaysia,
mm-hmm.
And you enter in the Indian Ocean. So you're going through the straits and stuff, and these are shipping lanes. So this isn't. I'm not releasing any secretive information. Everybody knows. This is what ships
What's
do.
The Straits of what? People might have thought you said Straits of Gibraltar. You did not. What did you say?
The Straits.
We'll just call it the Straits. All right.
Yeah, we go through the Straits, and you go, and so you're entering the Indian Ocean. So you're going through the Indian Ocean. So about, I'd say about halfway through our trip through the Indian Ocean, I, you know, ran into someone I knew, and they said, hey, you know, want to see some pictures? You know, see some pictures. I didn't know what he meant. You know, maybe some pictures from home or something. So show me some detailed sets of pictures that were night pictures and day pictures, okay? And let's just say that there was these type of pictures, there was the technology to take pictures at night and high resolution during the day. What I was told, and this was told by more than just one, I ran a couple others that, mm-hmm. During that time, mm-hmm. that the whole group has been basically being tailed. And I said, well, first I said, tailed, what do you mean? You know, I thought maybe like it was Russian, you know, because they always do that. Russian aircraft do that. They fly close. They do their clothes. They fly by. So it's in the Chinese. They've been doing this for a lot of years. So that's what I thought he meant. But when he showed me the pictures, the thing that had been following was about at least over a mile big. Because, but we're talking the aircraft that took this was high up and pointed. It was taking multiple pictures of this day and night. And this thing, if you were to, and we're talking thousands of feet up in the air, and this object would have been at least 7 or 10, you know, miles away from that, even 10 knots, whatever you want to say, mm-hmm. air miles, about 10, 11 miles away. And if you were to look at this picture and put your hand, okay, we're talking like line type of sight thing, it would be the size of a grown man's hand on that picture. So basically, if you're looking, you're about, and this thing was at least another 20,000 feet above where this aircraft was taking the picture. So we're talking not only that, we're talking at least 60,000 to 70,000 feet in the air, 11 miles away, and this object still is the size of a grown man's hand on that picture.
Oh,
so my best guess would be about a mile long or bigger.
Or
I mean,
bigger.
This thing was humongous. And it had orbiting, I would say, smaller type craft.
Mm-hmm.
It, you could tell this wasn't like where it was like, well, there's some distortion in the picture. These are high resolution pictures. And there was actual, like, uniformity to these orbitable things around the main thing.
All right.
And
all right.
The thing was humongous.
Okay. I'm going to pause and come right back and continue this story. So this group of ships, Navy ship task force plus, moving across the Indian Ocean, 60,000 feet elevation, perhaps. They had planes up taking pictures day and night of this object, which was tracking and surveilling them, although it knew it could be seen most of the way across or all the way across the Indian Ocean. A ship, a craft, a piece of machinery, ultimately, a huge machine, a flying machine with lots of things in it, living things, watching this Navy task force move across the Indian Ocean. Photographs galore. Hang on. Be right back. Back. I can't tell you how many people over the years have been on this program who have been in the military, and especially out at sea, who have seen things either flying overhead, tracking their ship, like Gary is describing, seeing pictures of something tracking this entire fleet, or even seeing craft come up and out of the ocean. All right, they're very simple for them to go. Water is just a little thicker than air as far as they're concerned. They go right in it. So, yeah, this is not unusual, and I'm sure there are probably some of you listening out there who have been in the military who have seen things like this as well. Gary, go ahead with the story. This is fascinating. What was the was this known amongst most of the people on the ship you were on?
In certain areas, ones who would have access to these photos,
uh-huh.
really, they were trading them between, sure. They, you know, and were told under no circumstances to mention anything.
Discuss it, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was like a hush-hush thing. And, you know, they didn't, it was, the understanding, especially with, I'm assuming in the lower ranking pilots and stuff like that and right. different people, that they, you know, they're compartmentalized in the military, so they would have no clue or have no idea why, you know, this was. Now, there would probably be certain people in certain areas that would know why they were doing what they were doing. You got to understand the Indian Ocean. You look at this. Look at that area of the Indian Ocean. The Indian Ocean is just humongous. The Pacific Ocean is humongous.
Right.
There's no land within. You know, you can go in some directions and parts of these on Earth where in the oceans where you're talking thousands of miles, and you'll never reach land.
Right.
And that was, you know, these are the type of areas they would probably utilize. This craft was just, it was humongous, and it was big.
Well, the interesting thing, too, Gary, is that it was up 60,000 feet. It wasn't down low. It didn't have to be.
No.
I mean, they were probably absorbing everything about that fleet, everybody on it, everything they wanted.
Exactly. And possibly, maybe you had some of that. The craft itself had its own operation going in that area, or in the, you know.
Well, you said it was sending out scout craft.
Area to us.
Well, the scout craft
exactly.
could have come down and flown and cloaked. You wouldn't have seen them. They could have flown right overhead.
Exactly, and matter of fact, what even been tracking us from under the water too. For all we know, we have
right.
no clue.
Right.
And you know, you don't know. This, as I'm saying, it was just that one thing that with that pictures though were just amazing and pretty good quality pictures.
Wow.
You know, like a very the pictures. You know, like I said, they were. You could tell this thing was. It was moving. It was just hovering. Like, I guess you would consider it hovering or in place and just tracking.
Well, you're making the fleet's making about 20 knots, so it wouldn't have to move much to stay with you, right. obviously.
But think about the technology. And, okay, you got gravitational pull. Something at least a mile or longer. Being able to maintain that slow of a speed
mm-hmm.
and in the air and not move, not go, like be wiggling around trying to maintain
right,
itself.
Right, right.
Smooth as silk, and it's just following, just like a satellite. And you know, obviously, look, you got to understand, we know that the technology we're talking has to be, we don't know how far advanced these civilizations, these entities or creatures or whatever you want to call them who are visiting here, how many thousand years advanced ahead of us they are. It could be millions of years for all we know.
Maybe even at the exploding rate of technology now, maybe they're only 1,000 years ahead of us. Technology is exploding. Look at AI. Look at all the rest of it. Exploding. So, the potential is enormous. Could you see...
It would have to be a civilization, too.
Of course.
It's highly educated, focused, not, you know, easily distracted by silly entertainment and the stuff that goes on now. You know, a very sophisticated, focused society.
Right.
Were
you able... after you saw these pictures, was this something that was... visible in the daylight to the naked eye?
That's the whole point, because like I go out and a few others would go out and we just be looking around and say, uh-huh. Well, man, where is it?
So it was cloaked, you know, cloaked day and night.
Possibly, yes.
Uh-huh.
Possibly cloaked, or it was just so high up that it was just, you know, we're talking. I'm just estimating it was 60 to 80,000 feet, but you know, you're talking a plane that was probably itself within 20, 30,000 feet in the air taking
mm-hmm.
these photos.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking 60,000 feet above that. We're talking close to 100,000 feet up. So we're talking pretty close to, you know, in the high end of the
ionosphere. Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right on the edge, you know, right on the edge of the space, you know, ionosphere right there, right at that edgy area. So it'd be almost impossible to see.
I'm sure that most of you listening have looked at YouTube videos of the ISS, the International Space Station, and seen some of the things, the lights flying around that. Yeah, and they're not toilet dumps either. They're lights, and they're moving, yeah. And they change direction. And yeah, they we're being watched all the time, constantly. And I think
it was that one YouTube I think you had not too long ago you had posted where obviously it was this humongous size craft that had flew by basically the light itself and blocked the light from the space station. They cut their feet off immediately.
Pretty funny. Yeah, pretty funny. Anyhow, this there'll come a time when they'll finally have to give up this cover-up. And then, as you said, the questions will begin. Well, what's your relationship with these people? Do you know them? Have you had contact? That's when the heat is going to get to be a little bit noticeable.
See, it's always been my opinion for a lot of years, Jeff, is that it's not that they're hiding the fact that there's UFOs. They want to hide the fact of the relationship they've had with these UFOs.
Right.
I think it's that they like the relationship the way it is. Well, whoever likes the relationship the way it is out of the public eye, because there's no questions. So it's just when you're out of the public eye, you know, all bets are off. You can do anything you want. And you know, there's no questioning. There's nothing. There's a few, like, you get that more than likely Trump, when he was first elected, you had that look on his face like he just seen, you know, the opening the gates of hell. He had that look on his face. So there's only a few people, you know, there's only a certain small group in this world who have this knowledge. And I think they like keeping it that way. I really do. I think they kept it that way. And like I said, it's not because they want to keep people from, you know, the secret of the UFO itself. It's the relationship with the entity, whatever the beings are on these UFOs. That's what they want to keep the secret, is the relationships, what they've gained from
it,
what they're doing, why they're doing what they're doing. Because you have to ask yourself the first two questions would be, how long have you been working with these people, and what is it that these beings, when they first came here and first introduced themselves, made you have to work for them? What was in their plans? What is still in their plans? What are they doing? What have they been here all this time doing? What have you been doing to aid them? What effect on humanity has these beings done over the years, harmful things that you've just let slide and let happen? And then it would be a lot of questions to be asked, and there would be no answers. It would be no good answers anyway. They couldn't.
No.
And then you run into the issue as, well, wait a minute then. Then, you know, there's a lot of things like that really puts a lot of things in the doubt in people's minds. And then they would have a revolution on their hands then. That's what I think they're more afraid of than anything. Because if it was just saying, hey, you know what, here's some UFOs, this is the first time we've ever seen them ourselves, you know, people would be conditioned to that. But they're not conditioned for is as their own people in government, not only
well,
their own people,
like I said,
people in their own human race be
right.
Doing secretive things for all these years.
Eisenhower at Edwards Air Force Base in 1954, we've got eyewitnesses to the encounter. He went there, he met, a craft landed, there was a meeting, and this is what Gary's talking about. What kind of deals were cut? Are there different UFOs with different occupants going to different spheres of influence on the planet? Is there a group going to the Russians, a group going to the Chinese? Do they have their meetings as well? Do they have their treaties or whatever you want to call them with some other off-planet alien intelligence than we do? All possibilities.
And which that goes back to the X-Files, where they had the episodes where they were keeping track of every single human's DNA on the planet.
Yeah.
And mapping our DNA and looking for certain genetic traits where they were running experiments on.
All those files.
About these abductees, Abductees, I don't think has ever been picked at random. I really don't. I don't think the cattle mutilations are at random. I think the abductees, everything to do with anything with the abductees, these and the cattle mutilations and all the different animal mutilations and different sort of stuff like that. They didn't just randomly pick people. I think they had specific genetic markers that they wanted, and they picked them for a reason. And I really truly believe that. I think there's.
It makes sense, Gary. It's logical. It's good linear thought. Yeah. It's the most common sense conclusion to come to when you're talking about this. Yes, people are tracked like racehorses, like thoroughbred horses, like dog breeders, whatever. They track a genetic line. They tweak it. They mess with it. They'll do things. They'll want to see how we as beings react to it. There's a lot going on genetically that the rank and file people will never know about. And I suggest it's far down the road from what even this great audience could, and me, yourself, I'm including myself, we can't figure it out. But they're way ahead. No. When you got artificial intelligence now, which is much further employed and much further involved with our intelligence agencies, our governments, all of it. AI is a big player already. And where will it be in another 2-3 years? As I said, the explosion in technology is mind-boggling. You've got to keep that in mind, too. 20-30 years ahead of what they tell us. And that's the way it's always been. But now, even more so.
Oh, yeah. When you see commercially, has been out at least 3 to 4 decades or more. Some stuff even more than that. And you know, you got all the various technologies coming out that you just, you know, it's not a coincidence in the last 100 years of this whole civilization of Earth. There's more came out in the last 100 years than the whole history of humans on this planet.
Exactly.
So what happened in the last 100 years that's any, you know, that was different than 10,000 years ago, 20, 30, 40,000 years ago? Because we were really moving slowly. We were just barely, you know, we went from, you know, up to like what, 300 years ago, we were using wooden ships with sails. And we're at the point now, it's like in the last 300 years, we moved from wooden ships all the way up to what we're at right now.
I'd say the last 150 years. Yeah, but good
exactly.
Point. Yeah, sure. The worst thing that humans have done or been allowed to do, in my view, was to crack the atom. Never should have gone into that business of nuclear power, nuclear weapons. No. We didn't need it. It's done nothing but destroy the planet. Every single nuclear power plant has all of its spent fuel rods either on campus there or at a nearby general central facility, and they have to be taken care of, these spent fuel rods, for 50,000 years. Of course, if we're still around, if we survive, we'll come up with a way to transmute this deadly radioactive waste into something harmless. That'll happen maybe 10, 20, 30 years. Who knows? There's a way to do it. There's certainly physics involved, chemistry involved, electromagnetics involved. But right now, nuclear power is the biggest bane and danger on the planet. Period. Look at Fukushima. War without actually a shot having been fired. The death of the Pacific Ocean. The covering of North America. And you look at these fires burning in Southern California and earlier in Northern California, and you have to understand that all the vegetation that's being burned has been involved with collecting and uptaking and absorbing radiation for the last 6.5, 7 years this March. And that's all been burned, and it goes right up into the atmosphere, spread all around it as smoke, and then it comes right back down.
Just think about it. It's really basically a major fire at a nuclear waste dump. That's really what it is.
Perfect.
And it's that simple. People don't understand that. They don't understand. You know, nuclear energy is great if we had the technology to take care of the waste and contain any type of accident. We don't have that technology. We have the technology to produce the energy. We don't have the technology to contain it. That's the biggest problem. And why would we go insane building? Think about this. They built all these reactors on fault lines, earthquake fault lines.
Fault lines, Phil.
Saint-Onofre have been leaking for years.
Yeah.
They've known about it.
They're all leaking.
And they had to close Saint-Onofre down. Saint-Onofre right now, they have all them. It still has, was reported when they had the Northridge quake at the time.
Uh-huh.
Had cracks within its foundation. They knew it. Kept it going on and on and on because Southern California Edison didn't want to close it down for money-making purposes.
Sure.
And they let that thing go.
Remember, we don't have any value to those people. None. Human life means nothing. Understand that.
And neither does it to the climate change people. These weirdos that are on TV saying that that cow farts and what you breathe out, that the trees turn into oxygen, is the biggest danger to the earth, while pretending Fukushima don't exist. It's the most asinine.
They won't touch it. They won't talk about it.
They won't touch it because they're being funded by the same ones who are allowed Fukushima to happen. See, people don't. You know, it's the most, things are right in front of your eyes. Sometimes you got to say to yourself, like, you know, why aren't you talking about this? And I go on these blog sites and these sections where you get these climate change people on there. See, global warming. I said, but what about Fukushima? No answer. Or they'll write back, say, oh, that's not a bigger day. Fukushima has been contained.
They're actually saying that? Saying it's contained?
A college professor, Jeff, of a science department of a college back east, he argued with me on Facebook in a comment section because it was about a climate change type story. And I went in, I always talk about starting to talk about geoengineering and Fukushima. And so he tried to tell me, he seriously said, well, Fukushima's been contained. Nothing to worry about, and that wasn't really the big problem anyway. And he tried to tell me, then he tried to explain, tried to literally say, climate change is what caused Fukushima anyway. I said, when you're arguing with insanity like that, there is no reason.
No.
There's just no reasoning. That's like hell. You know, like they say, you know, hell is a place of no reason. And when you argue with someone like that, it's like being in hell. Because they're insane. How could you possibly say climate change had anything to do with Fukushima? It was an earthquake and made the reactor completely melted down, and because they shouldn't have built it on a fault line in the first place.
They built it on fill dirt as well. It's on fill. They cut down a bluff. And used heavy equipment to compact it, and that's where they built the nuclear power plant. Three of the four reactors exploded, melted down. The corium has never been found. It's underneath, maybe hundreds of feet under the ground. Now, we don't know. And the water from the mountain behind it that flows through the water table, right through the plant, under the destroyed reactors, through the radioactive corium, becomes liquid death, goes right into the ocean 25 hours a day for 6.5 years. That's why the Pacific is dead.
And
that's why many areas in North America have no more bugs, no more birds. Okay. Go ahead, Gary. Go ahead.
And by the way, it goes in the ocean, and what does the ocean do? Evaporates in the clouds. Clouds turns into big rainstorms, and they hit the West Coast. They hit the Gulf of Alaska. They hit the jet stream. They go from, you know, west to east on the jet stream. You have jet stream storms coming in that all originate from the Gulf of Alaska, all originally from near off the coast of Japan, and then they travel. You see how the jet stream travels. So you're picking up all this moisture from the ocean, which is all full. It's fully radiated to the point of literally almost being like liquid poison, and it's dumping. It's been dumping since the day Fukushima had the meltdown, and it hasn't stopped since.
They actually detected radioactive cesium from Fukushima. I think it was 3 days after the explosion, one of the first big explosions of those three reactors that blew. They got that in New Mexico. They detected it there. That's how quickly it came over in the jet stream.
And that's not going anywhere. It's not like a water soluble chemical where you just dilute it with water and it just goes away. That's not what it does. You have this bile, which is a buildup, and you know this yourself. And it builds up over time, and it doesn't go away. It gets worse over time, and it slowly builds, and it slowly builds, and it slowly builds.
Constant accumulation. Constant. Never going to stop. And that's why I think your analogy of the fires, like burning a radioactive dump, very good. Yeah, because you got those plants have been uptaking it from the soil and the rain for 6.5 years. UC Berkeley used to put out really excellent first-rate reports tracking the radiation from Fukushima until the reports kept getting worse and worse. And then they told UC Berkeley, they being the controllers, no more reports, and that was the end of it. Yeah. They were finding it in pine tree needles, in dairy cattle milk, in vegetables, in topsoil, in groundwater, everywhere.
Well, you know who that was? Probably was PG&E up in Northern California.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'm sure of course it was. PG&E, they're not going to let, you know, the cat out of the bag on the nuclear crap. And, you know, think about this, Jeff. See if it, even at this point, it hadn't hit the water table. You got firefighters dumping millions of gallons of water a day to fight these fires. And well, guess where this water is going? It's going into the ground, into the groundwater. It's going into the water table. So now you've poisoned the groundwater. You see, it's just, it's you can't get away from it. And for people to sit there, and I don't understand where the disconnect is.
Well, it's media mandated disconnect. Remember the movie, always remember the movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still, 1951. E.T. came here in the presence of one extraterrestrial and his robot, and he gave humankind an ultimatum. Do away with, disarm, deconstruct all of your nuclear weapons and nuclear power plants in 1 week, or the planet will be destroyed. That's the only thing that would ever give us hope here, that nuclear energy would be put back in the bottle, which it can't be, but at least we could stop building them. There's many new ones on the drawing books. Thank you very much, Gary, for being here. Great, great insights, and we appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Sure. You have a good evening, Jeff.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Gary Holland, who will have his own program on this network pretty soon, very wise. And we will continue with hour 3. Let's see. Brother Nathaniel coming up next.